This is VOA News. I'm Richard Green. Minnesota Governor Tim Walz has accepted the Democratic nomination as Kamala Harris's vice presidential running mate at the party's convention in Chicago. He thanked the delegates for bringing the joy to this fight in his speech Wednesday night and boasted of his progressive record as governor, including providing free school lunch for all students in the state. Before Walz's acceptance speech, former U.S. President Bill Clinton blasted Republican ex-president Donald Trump as selfish during his speech at the convention. Here's AP Washington correspondent Sargar Magani.
Clinton says Trump is all about himself, and the next time you hear him speak, don't count the lies.
Count the eyes.
Clinton says this election features a choice.
Kamala Harris or the people.
Versus the other guy.
He's about me, myself, and I.
Comparing Trump to a tenor warming up before going on stage.
By singing me, 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 me.
But when Harris is president.
Every day will begin with you, 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 you.
Sagar Magani, Washington.
Trump on Wednesday responded to the comments against him at the Democratic convention at his first outdoor rally since an attempted assassination last month in the state of Pennsylvania. AP correspondent Ed Donahue has more.
Trump pointed out in a speech in North Carolina, he took notes.
Did you see Barack Hussein Obama last night? Take little shots. He was taking shots at your president.
The other day I heard someone compare Trump to the neighbor who keeps running his leaf blower outside your window every minute of every day.
You know, they always say, sure, please stick to policy. Don't get personal. And yet they're getting personal all night long, these people. Do I still have to stick to policy?
I'm Ed Donahue.
For more on this and all the stories we're covering, visit us at voanews.com. This is VOA News. More than 1,000 pro-Palestinian protesters rallied Wednesday near a neighboring park where pro-Israel demonstrators gathered near the Democratic National Convention in Chicago. The demonstration comes after 56 protesters were arrested Tuesday night following an intense standoff with Chicago police at a protest not affiliated with a coalition of more than 200 groups that organize permitted rallies. The Israeli military struck a school and a nearby house in Gaza City on Wednesday, killing at least 3 people and wounding 15, according to the territory's Civil Emergency Service. Israel's military has leveled much of the Palestinian enclave since the start of the offensive in Gaza in October 2023. Israeli airstrikes across Gaza killed at least 50 Palestinians in the past 24 hours, according to Palestinian health officials on Wednesday. The White House said U.S. President Joe Biden spoke by phone with Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu Wednesday about ways to advance a potential Gaza ceasefire and hostages deal. The call followed U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken's whirlwind trip to the Middle East that ended on Tuesday without an agreement between Israel and Hamas on a ceasefire in the Palestinian enclave. Blinken and mediators from Egypt and Gaza have pinned their hopes on a U.S. bridging proposal aimed at narrowing the gaps between the two sides in the 10-month-old Gaza war. Cameroon's political opposition says many qualified voters are reluctant to register ahead of a deadline because they think the current president plans to rig elections. Moki Edwin Kinzika reports from Yaoundé.
Cameroon's elections management body says 7.9 million civilians have registered as voters ahead of the August 31 deadline set by the Central African State Electoral Law. Cameroon is preparing for presidential elections next year to end an ongoing 7-year mandate. Longtime leader Paul Biya was declared the winner of the country's 2018 presidential polls, even though some opposition and civil society groups reject the results. Moki Edwin Kinzeka, VOA News, Yaoundé, Cameroon.
Join VOA's Flashpoint as we delve into the heart of the world's most pressing conflicts and crises, from the Israel-Hamas war to the Russia-Ukraine war, as well as regional hotspots spanning from Asia to Africa and beyond. We also shine a light on humanitarian crises and the ongoing ramifications of the climate crisis on the world's population. Flashpoint is your source for understanding the critical issues shaping our world and the people at the heart of these crises. I'm Richard Green for VOA News.
morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Barty, Washington. Today is Thursday, August 22nd, and here are some of the stories we are following. The Democratic National Convention continues Wednesday in Chicago.
Kamala Harris will work to solve our problems, seize our opportunities, ease our fears, and make sure every single American, however they vote, has a chance to chase their dreams.
Cameroon opposition and the civil society blamed low voter registration on President Paul Biya, a U.S. official who holds talks in Africa on the responsible use of artificial intelligence in military operations. Peace talks between the DRC and Rwandan governments are scheduled to resume in Angola's capital, Luanda, this week.
We need hope. We need peace. And we're hoping that this time all this relationship are going to bring peace in Congo.
And an Afrobarometer survey says that young Africans prefer democracy to any authoritarian alternative. Those stories and more are coming up on Daybreak Africa. We will be joining shortly the Democratic National Convention in Chicago, where Vice Presidential nominee Tim Walz will be accepting his nomination. But earlier Wednesday, the delegates heard from former President Bill Clinton.
One of the things that I've noticed over my increasingly long life is that a presidential election is unique in several ways. First of all, it's the greatest job interview for the greatest job in the world. Secondly, the Constitution says we, the people, get to do the hiring. And the third thing is that every 4 years, we get to change the requirements for the job. So here's what I'm thinking, because I try to apply this in every election. Will this president take us backward or forward? Will this president give our kids a brighter future? Depends. Will this president bring us together or tear us apart? Will the president increase the peace, security, and stability and freedom that we enjoy and extend it to others as we can? We, the people, we have to make a decision about these kind of questions. So in 2024, we got a pretty clear choice, it seems to me. Kamala Harris for the people, and the other guy who's proved even more than the first go-around that he's about me, myself, and I. I know which one I like better for our country. Kamala Harris will work to solve our problems, seize our opportunities, ease our fears, and make sure every single American, however they vote, has a chance to chase their dreams.
That was former President Bill Clinton speaking Wednesday night on day three of the Democratic National Convention in Chicago. The former Speaker of the House of Representatives, Nancy Pelosi, also addressed the delegates.
January 6th was a perilous moment for our democracy. Never before had a president of the United States so brazenly assaulted the bedrock of our democracy, so gleefully embraced political violence, so willfully betrayed his oath of office. Let us not forget who assaulted democracy on January 6th. He did. But let us not forget who saved democracy that day. We did. The parable of January 6th reminds us that our democracy is only as strong as the courage and commitment of those entrusted with its care. And we must choose leaders who believe in free and fair elections, who respect the peaceful transfer of power. The choice couldn't be clearer. Those leaders are Vice President Harris and Governor Walz. When the sun rose on January 7th, as our national anthem declares, we gave proof through the night that our flag was still there. Now, in this election, we are called upon to do the same, to stand together, to reject autocracy, to choose democracy, and we will do so by electing a Democratic House with Hakeem Jeffries as Speaker of the House. Electing a Democratic Senate, electing Tim Walz as Vice President of the United States, and electing Kamala Harris as the President of the United States.
The former Speaker of the House of Representatives, Nancy Pelosi, addressing delegates at the Democratic National Convention in Chicago. Joining us live from Washington, D.C. is Kweku Nuama, professor in the School of International Service at American University in Washington, D.C. Professor, welcome to Daybreak Africa.
Thanks for having me.
I know, Professor, there were some wonderful speeches Wednesday night, day three of the Democratic National Convention, as we await the presentation or the vice presidential nominee, Tim Walz, to make his presentation. Let's talk about those speeches. For example, former President Bill Clinton, Hakeem Jeffries, the minority leader in the House of Representatives, and former Speaker Nancy Pelosi. Take it from there.
So this has been a very interesting night. It's a little different from what they did on Monday and also yesterday. Of course, the theme is freedom, and it's clear from all the speeches that what they're trying to, the point that they're trying to make is that America needs freedom from all the bad things that Donald Trump and Republicans are bringing, and the person that can guarantee those freedoms is Kamala Harris. But not only that, people are also stressing the need to elect Democrats. So this is just not an election for the president, but it's also the president needs a Democratic Congress to get the work done for the American people. So if you go through all the speeches, everybody has, talked about the nice things that Kamala Harris will bring and the dangers of Trump. But the point is you also got to give a Democratic Congress. I think the person that so far brought the joy is Bill Clinton, the explainer-in-chief. And in his speech, he did something that I thought was also very important. He started off by praising Joe Biden. So that's very important. Democrats have to keep doing that. He praised Joe Biden. Then, of course, he went on to make the case for why Trump is dangerous and why everybody should work to make sure that Kamala Harris gets elected. And he stressed something that Michelle Obama stressed yesterday, that this is not going to be an easy fight. It's going to be very, very challenging because the country is divided essentially 50-50, and you really have to work for the vote. So that was important. I also thought that we've seen a showcasing of the next generation of Democratic leaders. We saw Hakeem Jeffries, who is the current leader of Democrats in the House, a very young man from New York. And we also saw Josh Shapiro, the young governor of Pennsylvania, and Wes Moore, the young governor of the state of Maryland. These people are auditioning for jobs in the potential Harris administration, but also they are auditioning for higher office. Remember, it was a speech like this that got Barack Obama his national staff. And so when you get these speaking slots, especially in prime time, you are speaking not to the people in the room, but you're speaking to the nation as a whole. And these guys hit it out of the park. Josh Shapiro was very electrifying. I think Hakeem Jeffries is also important because you see the bookends with him and Nancy Pelosi bringing, again, the importance of congressional leadership to the fore. And I think Nancy Pelosi, she was fantastic. She's the matriarch of the congressional Democrats. And she's also the person that, at least publicly, got Joe Biden to step aside. And so Democrats owe her a huge debt of relief. None of this stuff is possible without the work that she did to try and persuade Joe Biden to step up. And she, in her speech, she actually thanked him. Supposedly, they're not talking to each other now, but, you know, things will get better going down down the line. But she's been fantastic. She's been a strong leader for Democrats. She raises a lot of money for the party, and she's the person that has brought Democrats this moment. And
then, of course, I noticed also that there was a special attention paid to the events of January 6th. What can you tell us?
Yes. So the other thing that they are doing that's a little different from what they did the previous 2 days is they're using these video montages to drive home the point. And so they showed a video presentation about January 6th as a way of reminding people how dangerous Donald Trump is. They also showed a video presentation on the immigration crisis and the fact that it was Donald Trump who got Republicans to vote against a bill that they had already supported to deal with the border crisis. So they're using these video presentations to drive home the larger points. Because when people come and they make their speeches, it's a flurry of words and everybody's clapping. But then they will cut away to show these presentations to give people a little bit more detail.
Professor, thank you so much for joining us live on Daybreak Africa. We do appreciate it. Thank you very much.
Thanks for having me.
Kweku Nwama is a professor in the School of International Service at American University here in Washington, D.C. A U.S. State Department official was in Nigeria this week for crucial meetings with local authorities and regional bloc ECOWAS on the military use of artificial intelligence and issues related to the technology. Timothy Obiezu reports from Abuja on the meetings with Mallory Steward, the Assistant Secretary of State for the Bureau of Arms Control, Defense, and Stability.
Mallory Steward's two-day visit to Nigeria was part of the United States' commitment to deepen security cooperation in Africa. Steward met in Abuja with Nigerian officials and officials from the regional bloc ECOWAS to advance conversations on the responsible use of artificial intelligence in military applications. She spoke to journalists on Wednesday.
The U.S. government has been working with right now 55 other countries, hopefully more, including some African nations, to agree upon the responsible uses of AI in the military context, right? So sort of using AI in a manner consistent with international law, recognizing inherent human bias.
Steward went on to note the drawbacks of AI.
We've learned the hard way, inherent human bias built into the AI system, right? AI systems upon AI systems leading to maybe misinformation being provided to the decision maker. And so the effort through our political declaration process is to hear from as many countries as possible that are at the stage of working in artificial intelligence to their military, right? To see how we can minimize the risks.
In the last decade, sub-Saharan Africa, including Nigeria, has seen an increase in violence perpetrated by numerous armed groups. It is not clear if these groups are already using AI against governments like Nigeria's. Last year, the Global Terrorism Index report named the region a global epicenter of terrorism, accounting for nearly 60% of terror-related deaths. Nigerian authorities have been pushing for the integration of artificial intelligence in military operations, while acknowledging that adopting AI will require Africa-specific policies that address concerns. Security analyst Kabir Adamu of Beacon Consulting says the use of AI in military operations has advantages.
Given the position of the U.S. in terms of its military capacity and might, and its technological advancement, it will definitely be in a position to support Nigeria's desires, especially if it's able to contextualize some of the peculiarities within the Nigerian security space. We can't isolate ourselves from the International Committee of Nations. AI is embedded in security, so we have to do it. But in taking those steps, we need to be cognizant of the supporting infrastructure for good technology. Power is one of them. Culture.
The founder of Global Sentinel online magazine, Senator Irebu, says while AI has benefits, the technology still needs to be treated with caution.
It limits casualties in terms of the number of soldiers that will be deployed. So you conserve your boots. It helps also to penetrate maybe rough terrain, gather more intelligence. It's good that there is growing awareness of the issue of artificial intelligence, but Nigeria needs to first of all try to define its own policy and strategy with regard to artificial intelligence. More sensitization needs to be done, and more policy aspects of it also need to be developed.
In June, African ministers unanimously endorsed landmark continental AI strategy to advance Africa's digital future and development aspiration. And last week, the African Union approved the adoption of AI in public and private sectors in member states, including Nigeria. Stewart says the United States will be working to ensure that concerns about the ethical use of AI are addressed and many more countries adopt the technology for its benefits. Timothy Obiezu, VOA News, Abuja, Nigeria.
You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Buffy, Washington. Today is Thursday, August 22nd. For more African news and features, visit our website at voa.africa.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms. We are on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. We are awaiting to join the Democratic National Convention in Chicago, where Vice Presidential nominee Tim Walz is expected to soon officially accept his nomination.
Please welcome the Democratic nominee for Vice President, Governor Tim Walz.
First of all, to Vice President Harris, thanks for putting your trust in me and for inviting me to be part of this incredible campaign. And a thank you to President Joe Biden for 4 years of strong, historic leadership. It's the honor of my life to accept your nomination for Vice President of the United States. We're all here tonight for one beautiful, simple reason. We love this country. So thank you to all of you here in Chicago and all of you watching at home tonight. Thank you for your passion. Thank you for your determination. And most of all, thank you for bringing the joy to this fight. Now, I grew up in Butte, Nebraska, a town of 400 people. I had 24 kids in my high school class, and none of them went to Yale. But I'll tell you what, growing up in a small town like that, you learn how to take care of each other. That family down the road, they may not think like you do. They may not pray like you do. They may not love like you do, but they're your neighbors. And you look out for them, and they look out for you. Everybody belongs, and everybody has a responsibility to contribute. For me, it was serving in the Army National Guard. I joined up 2 days after my 17th birthday, and I proudly wore our nation's uniform for 24 years. My dad, a Korean War era Army veteran, died of lung cancer a couple years later. He left behind a mountain of medical debt. Thank God for Social Security survivor benefits. And thank God for the GI Bill that allowed my dad and me to go to college and millions of other Americans. Eventually, like the rest of my family, I fell in love with teaching. Three out of four of us married teachers. I wound up teaching social studies and coaching football at Mankato West High School. Go Scarlets! We ran a 44 defense. We played through to the whistle on every single play, and we even won a state championship. Never closed the yearbook, people. But it was those players and my students who inspired me to run for Congress. They saw in me what I had hoped to instill in them, a commitment to the common good, an understanding that we're all in this together, and the belief that a single person can make a real difference for their neighbors. So there I was, a 40-something high school teacher with little kids, zero political experience, and no money, running in a deep red district. But you know what? Never underestimate a public school teacher. My neighbors in Congress for 12 years, and I learned an awful lot. I learned how to work across the aisle on issues like growing the rural economies and taking care of veterans. And I learned how to compromise without compromising my values. Then I came back to serve as governor, and we got right to work making a difference in our neighbors' lives. We cut taxes for the middle class. We passed paid family and medical leave. We invested in fighting crime and affordable housing. We cut the cost of prescription drugs and helped people escape the kind of medical debt that nearly sank my family. And we made sure that every kid in our state gets breakfast and lunch every day.
That was Minnesota Governor Tim Walz officially accepting his nomination as vice presidential candidate for Kamala Harris. That was live from Chicago. And that's it for this Thursday, August 22nd edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for being our guest this morning. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, I am James Botti in Washington saying, have a great day, but please be safe, whatever you do.
Africa presents the latest news about Africa and the world and its news summaries. Africa in Brief airs every day at 400, 500 and 600 UTC. Give us 5 minutes of your time to be brought up to date. Africa in Brief, your trusted source for news.